Murphy was the first head of special investigations not to get her rear bounced onto the street after a token week or three of unsolvable cases. Generally speaking, when the administration wanted someone off the force, they'd get promoted to running SI, or at least working in it. Every cop there had some kind of failing that had landed them what everyone else considered to be a cruddy assignment. It had, by and large, created a strong sense of camaraderie among the SI officers, a bond only made tighter by the way they occasionally faced off with one kind of nightmarish creature or another. SI cops had taken down several half-assed dark spell slingers, half a dozen vampires, seven or eight ravening trolls, and a demon that had manifested itself out of a mound of compost-heated garbage behind a pawn shop in Chinatown. SI could handle itself pretty well because they played careful, they worked together, and they understood that there were unnatural beings that sometimes had to be dealt with in ways not strictly in accordance with police procedure. Oh, and because they had a hired wizard to advise them about bad guys, of course. I like to think that I had contributed, too. But I guess every bucket of fruit has something go rotten sooner or later. In SI, the stinker was Detective Rudolph. Rudy was young, good-looking, clean-cut, and had slept with the wrong councilman's daughter. He had applied some industrial-strength denial to his experiences with SI, despite freak encounters with monsters, magic, and human kindness. He had clung to a steadfast belief that everything was normal, and the realm of the paranormal was all make-believe. Rudy didn't like me. Rudy didn't like Murphy. If the kid had sabotaged Murphy's investigation in order to curry favor with the folks in Homicide, maybe he was angling to get out of SI. And maybe he'd lose a bunch of teeth the next time he walked through a quiet parking garage. I doubted Murphy would take that kind of backstabbing with good grace. I spent a moment indulging myself in a pleasant fantasy in which Murphy pounded Rudy's head against the door of her office at SI's home building until the cheap wood had a Rudolph-shaped dent in it. I enjoyed the thought way too much. I gathered up a few things from around my apartment, including the anti-venom potions Bob had helped me with. I checked on Bob while I was in the lab and got a sleepy and incoherent response that I understood to mean that he needed more rest. I let him, went back upstairs, and called my answering service. I had a message from Susan, a phone number. I called it, and a second later she answered, "Harry, you've become clairvoyant. If you can do a foreign accent, you could get a hotline." "Like, sure, as if," Susan drawled ditzily. "California isn't foreign," I said. "You'd be surprised. How did things go?" "Okay, I guess," I said. "I got a second." "Michael?" she asked. "Shiro." "Who?" "He's like Michael, but shorter and older."
Good. I did the legwork."
I thought of some work I'd seen Susan's legs do before, but I only said, "And?"
"And the downtown Marriott is hosting an art gala this very night, including a gallery sale and a fundraiser auction for charity."
I whistled. "Wow. So lots of art and money moving around, changing hands, being shipped hither and yon."
"Hither, maybe, but I don't think UPS does yon," Susan said. "Seems like a good place to sell a hot article or three. And it's all sponsored by the Chicago Historical and Art Society."
"Who?"
"A very small and very elite club for the upper crust. Gentleman Johnny Marcone is chairman of its board of directors."
"Sounds like smuggling country, all right," I said. "How do I get in?"
"You put up a $5,000 per plate donation to charity."
"$5,000?" I said. "I don't think I've ever had that much all in one place at one time."
"Then you might try option two."
"Which is?"
Susan's voice took on a note of satisfaction. "You go with a reporter from the Midwest Arcane on her last assignment for her editor. I talked to Trish and got two tickets that had originally been given to a reporter on the Tribune."
"I'm impressed," I said.
"It gets better. I got us formal wear. The gala begins at 9.
"Us?"
Susan, I don't want to sound like an ass, but do you remember the last time you wanted to come on an investigation with me?" "This time I'm the one with the tickets," she said. "Are you coming with me or not?"
I thought about it for a minute, but didn't see any way around it. There wasn't time for a long argument either. I'm in. I have to meet the Reds at McAnally's at 8.
Meet you there with your tux. 8:30?
Yeah. Thank you.
Sure, she said quietly. Glad I could help.
Silence stretched long enough to become painful for both of us. I finally broke it at the same time as Susan.
Well, I'd better let you go, Susan said. I have to hurry to get all of this done.
All right, I said. Be careful.
Stones and glass houses, Harry. See you this evening.
We hung up, and I made sure I was ready to go.
Then I went to pick up my second and work out the terms to a duel I was increasingly certain I had little chance of surviving.